We will call the Employee Benefits Committee to order, and would you please take roll? We know we have one person missing, Senator O'Ban informed me that she had a previous engagement.
Senators, Chairman Krebsbach.
Present.
Dever.
Here.
Kilzer.
Here.
Nelson.
Here.
O'Ban. Poolman.
Here.
Representatives, Kreit.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Baining.
Here.
Doctor.
Here.
Gugisberg.
Here.
Laning.
Here.
Schneider.
Here.
Madam Chair, you have quorum.
Then we will just proceed, and the first item on our agenda is for the consideration of the minutes from our February 16 meeting.
Move approval.
We have two motions, one from Senator Nelson and one from Senator Dever, so they have been properly moved. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carried. Then it calls for comments by the chairman, and my only comment is that we have work to do, so let's get at it. The first item that we have is to consider the receipt and technical comments on the actuarial information relating to House Bill 1436. So that is the first bill that we will discuss, and who is going to take the lead in discussing the bill? It looks like Sparb is the one.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sparb Collins, and I'm the Executive Director of the Public Employees Retirement System. House Bill 1436, handing out to you the couple of things, which are the technical review by Deloitte and the testimony that I gave on the House side when this committee was heard, or this bill was heard there. The bill, I think, generally, just to give you an idea, it does a couple of major provisions. One, it makes some adjustments in the process for this committee, and then secondly, the other major thing it does in the bill is it proposes that the PERS group insurance plan would become self-insured instead of the modified fully insured arrangement that it has today. And the bill goes on to state to provide for a $50 million line of credit at the Bank of North Dakota when the plan is self-insured to facilitate the cash flow of the plan. And so at a high level, that's the provisions in the bill. And what I'll just talk to you about is those portions that relate to PERS and the Deloitte conclusions. One of the things is that, as Deloitte notes, if we went from our modified fully insured contract to this self-insured, is that we would have to go into the marketplace and buy some stop-loss insurance coverage, which is something that self-insured plans have. We don't have that today because we have our maximum exposure is basically our premium plus the reserve or the gain-sharing corridor. And so there's two types here that they talk about, individual and aggregate stop loss. We'd have to take a look. Statute requires us to take individual. There's been discussion that maybe we would also want to take aggregate stop loss. And so these are the two types of reinsurance that we would have that would replace the cap that we have today under the fully insured. But it's not necessarily going to be at the same level because, you know, your aggregate insurance you don't buy like ours is right now at about 101%. You know, the aggregate you buy at about 120%. And then the individual stop loss you buy on an individual basis. And so, you know, the types of coverage there are quite a bit different than they are in the type of plan we have now, which is just part of the way they're administered. The other thing that Deloitte mentions is that one of the things that's inherent with a, and maybe what I should do is just take you to page 3 of my testimony. And here it talks about some of the advantages and disadvantages of a traditional fully insured versus a traditional self-insured. And this goes to what Deloitte mentioned. One of the advantages of fully insured is that, you know, you don't have any risk of financial losses. You don't have to maintain reserves, which are two types, incurred but not reported claims, and you don't need to maintain a reserve for your claims losses. And then the employer also doesn't need to deal with cash flow issues in the plan. And so these are all of the advantages that we have today in our modified fully insured, but they're saying in a self-insured plan, these are things now that are going to become responsibilities of us and you as the employer. We're going to have to make sure we reserve this monies. You're going to be at risk for the financial losses that are going to occur and those things. So that's what they talk about under risk. There's going to be more risk to you under the self-insured than under the modified fully insured that we have now. So why would you want to go self-funding? Well, here are some of the advantages below on self-funding. There's some reduction in taxes that can occur. You're going to avoid, and incidentally for us, we don't pay those taxes because you've already passed a law exempting us from those. Avoid certain ACA fees, and that's Affordable Care Act fees, that self-funded plans don't have to pay. Insurance companies do, and insurance companies pass those taxes back to us. Self-funding, when you hold the reserves yourself on a self-funded plan, you can get the earnings off of them, generally speaking. But under our modified fully insured, we do get the earnings off of it anyway. That's a special thing that we've negotiated. The big thing, of course, why people pick self-funding is the pass-through of the savings. On a regular fully insured product, if you pay $10 million in premium and your claims come in at 8, the insurance company keeps the other 2. When you get a big plan like ours that's running about $700 million a biennium, if we have a little fluctuation of 1 or 2 or 3%, at about every 1%, $7 million, so we come in 5% under, it's $35 million. It's not a big difference in the overall projection, but it's a lot of dollars. Well, you know, most people will be self-funded. Most companies will be self-funded to get that because that's a characteristic of self-funding. It's not a characteristic of fully insured. But like I say, in our case, we don't have a fully insured. Ours is a modified fully insured plan. And so underneath our contract that we have today, we get that money back. So it's passed back to us.
Sparb, do we get all of it back or is it shared?
We get, the formula is this. Today, we have the same formula in place today with Sanford that we've had with Blue Cross Blue Shield. And on the loss side, we share 50-50 in the first $6 million of loss. And after that, it all goes back to the carrier. So as we've talked about, previously, Sanford looks like it'll be taking about a $35-40 million loss on our business for the at the end of this 2-year period. Now we're going to have to pay $3 million of that, and they're going to have to pay the other $37 million of it. Or if it ends up at 50, they're going to have to pay $47 million. We've capped out our loss on it. Now one of the things we negotiated in the renewal is that as we look to the future, they have a challenge of taking that business. They need to put into place a business plan not to lose that money. And right now, that's not our challenge. I mean, it's theirs because, we don't take that risk. But we negotiated away that corridor on the upside, on the downside. We said, well, if you don't do it, we're going to lose another $3 million, and we don't want to lose another $3 million. And so right now we got rid of that, and they're at risk for 100% of everything over premium. No more quarter. And the other thing we asked them was to increase their reserves, which we talked here, by $30 million more because of some of the losses. And that's one of the things, if we're self-insured, we come back and talk to you about, is saying we need more reserves. So that's one of the big reasons why most employers, they don't have this in-between option like we do. And, you know, if your choice was between a traditional fully insured plan and a traditional self-insured plan, I'd probably stand here today and tell you to go self-insured. But because we get the benefits of a self-insured plan with our modified one, you know, we've kind of got the in-between, got the best of this and the best of that. And we get rid of the worst of this and we get rid of the worst of that. That's what we tried to do over the years with those contracting. So if you go to page 4, you can see here that if we did go self-insured, the benefits we're going to get is we're going to avoid the ACA fees, and some administrative fees will be less. We're going to lose the risk protection. We're going to have to maintain both an incurred but not reported reserve and a reserve for claims. And we're going to have to maintain cash flow on it as well. So those are some of the differences. I think as you look back over history here on page 4 or 5, you can see that, you know, we've through this refund that we get, like you would if you were self-insured, we've applied that back to premium on many bienniums, which are refunds that go back to you as a participant in the plan and refunds that go back to the other members of the plan as well. Staff had just a couple of observations on the bill. We believe that if we do go self-insured, and you may recall last biennium when we were looking at it, we did have in the budget two staff to go self-insured, and the board made the decision not to, and so we were able to take those out. We had them in the budget this time. That decision was made before the executive, so that was taken out. But here again, if we go self-insured, we feel we need two staff to help administer the program. And hopefully make sure that we get it into a profitable situation instead of a loss situation like it is today, because otherwise you're going to take that loss. Reserves, we're going to have to talk with you about reserves. Yes.
Excuse me, there's a question from Representative Kreit.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And Barb, what determines the fund reserve account that's set in statute, the 40.2 to 80.4? There's a big range there.
Yes.
Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, the statute requires that we maintain, I think it's a 1 to 1.5 months of claims reserve for incurred but not reported. And then I think it's a 1.5 to 3 months of claims reserve for claims. And so that's the range. And to give you an idea, I mean, we go through right now, if we come self-insured, this is a big business you're bringing in. We pay out about $24 million a month in claims. And so when you start talking about whether you're going to have 1 month or 2 months of reserves, it's the difference between 24 and 48 million. And if you're going, you know, 1.5 to 3, you know, those are big gaps in there. And that's why it's set in those ranges. The more reserves you have, the better. And as you look, to our history, PERS was self-insured. We were self-insured in the 80s. We started off fully insured under a traditional fully insured, and then the plan went self-insured in the 80s. And the plan, if you go back to page 1 of my testimony, you'll see here, the history of the increases, and actually the years that we were self-insured, our premium increases were higher. And that, you know, that's not because self-insured, the environment was different and things, but, and then the year we transferred over, the transition year from self-insured to our modified fully insured contract, there was a 47% increase in premium to get that done. Because the plan, when it was in the 87-89 biennium, actually went, I don't want to say broke, but we ran out. We couldn't cash flow the plan anymore.
We have another question. Representative Doctor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Sparb, how much do we have in reserve currently if we would move over to self-insured? What does the state have in reserves?
Yes. I got a handout for that if you want to take a look. Basically, today we have about $35 million in what we call available reserves. on the health side. And keep in mind that the budget that is going through your process today spends about $16 million of that. So if you say, you know, if the budgets come out the way they are today, we will be down to 16 35 is, we'll be down to whatever the difference is in that. Because, you know, $16 million is being spent already.
Representative Boehning.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Sparb, on this, on page 5, you show the chart here with the premiums increase, but I don't see anything in here how much we've taken out of the reserve fund over the years to buy down that premium.
That's in this last column over here is buy down amounts, and you can see here that like this biennium, it was talked about at $18.67. That's been increased, I think, now. In the 2013-15, it was $20.04 per contract. In 2009-2011, it was 14 cents a contract.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. I was actually looking for the total dollar amount. You know, time we figure, that's what I was looking for, was the full dollar amount. I think this time we're talking about 16, 17 million.
Yeah.
You know, and I know we've did this in the past. I was just trying to look for what the dollar amounts that we've actually used without having to try to figure out how many contracts there were and try to do that.
Basically, I mean, we can try and put that together for you, but I mean, where we're sitting right now, you see you're not much different than what we were. Some of the others were lower than they were, because we're looking right now at around $27 with the new, with the way you adjusted it most recently. So, hope that's helpful. The other thing we just had a comment on is in the transition period in the bill. The bill proposes that we would become self-insured on January 1 of 2018. That transition period we feel is tight because it assumes two things. One, that we're going to be able to go through another full bidding process and an implementation process in 6 months, and that we normally take longer than that. The second dilemma is that the bill proposes that we would renew for 6 months with Sanford. And I don't know if they would renew for us or not. And if they didn't, we would have to go back to the statute the way it is written now, and we'd have to do a full bid. We might not have insurance on July 1.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Sparb. So on the stop loss provision, I mean, the plan sponsor doesn't have any input into what they determine the amount of our insurance is that right?
If we were self-insured, we would pick the level of stop loss.
We would pick that.
Yep, the board would pick that. As a fully insured plan, I mean, we're covered.
We don't care.
We don't care because we have what you might call 100% aggregate loss. I mean, our maximum liability is the premium we pay. Whereas I'm self-funded, I mean, our liability is.
So if, may I continue?
Please continue.
So if we get that wrong, we're liable for everything over the stop loss, too.
Yeah. I mean, stop loss doesn't, individual stop loss, you know, you can pick it at $1,750,000, $500,000, and the prices vary. You know, the farther down you go, the more expensive
it
goes.
Are there any other questions at this point? Then continue, Sparb.
Okay, so implementation is a concern for us, the time frame. We also probably need to have some additional authority. If we can't renew with Sanford, we need we would find that out in May. We need something, I mean, we got to have a new coverage in place by July 1 to cover that 6 months. And the process that's outlined in the statute for us to do that, if we had to start over, isn't enough time. So we would not have insurance coverage July 1 for anybody.
Our contract with Sanford ends June 30. Is that it?
Our contract with them ends June 30. Now, we have a renewal with them, which is for 2 years, and that's already negotiated. That's, you know, we have a firm commitment from them on pricing and everything for that, and if that's the way you go, I mean, we've got that locked down. If you change this terms, we don't have a six-month contract with them. I mean, we're going to have to go back. We're going to have to try and negotiate something for 6 months, because under the bill, we have to be self-insured on January 1. And if they don't agree, or if we don't agree, although to be honest with you, there's not much that we could take exception to, because at that point, we need a carrier on January 1.
Am I to understand then that we do have a contract with them for the coming 2 years?
What we have is we have not signed a contract with them, but you know, we renewed with them, and we have a firm offer.
Firm offer.
That, you know, if everything, you know, you can change plan designs and stuff like that, and we'll still have it, but we have a firm offer that all we have to do is sign, and we're locked in. Whereas underneath this, that we don't have a six-month arrangement with them. We'd have to go back to the table. And if they didn't agree, we'd have to find somebody else, and that's all within a short period. We might not get it done. And if we didn't get it done, then there'd be no insurance coverage on July 1.
Okay.
So we're concerned with implementation timeframes. And the other part that is there is, under the statute, we have to follow a specific process, which would take too much time. Now, if you made a change in here and exempted us from that process and made it kind of a sole source, you know, just allowed the board to pick somebody, I mean, we might be able to get something done. But, you know, that would be something done fast in a week. We'd have to go out and pick somebody they didn't renew. And so that's our observations on the bill, and Deloitte's observations on the bill. Was there any other questions on that or the reserves?
Any questions from the committee? No, please continue.
I guess with that, that's
covers your
pretty much what we have here on it. Our
representative doctor has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sparb, so the size of the plan that we have for the state, is that typical plans of this size are usually self-insured? Like if you look,
well,
I know like Bismarck Public Schools are self-insured, and there's several plans. I think it's like 750 to 1,000 participants and higher are usually self-insured. Is that what you also see in the industry?
That goes back to what I was saying earlier. The choice here is not between fully insured and self-insured, because you know we have a hybrid plan, and you know most everybody else has a choice between fully insured and self-insured. And if you were facing the choice between those traditional products, you would go probably self-insured if you're larger. But in the case of North Dakota, because we have the hybrid plan, our hybrid plan has many of the benefits that a self-insured plan has. I mean, you get passed through the savings, all the things I outlined there, you get that. And so I would venture to say that if many of them had the choice that you have, they'd probably be underneath modified. Why not? I mean, you get the benefits and you don't pay much others. So.
Barb, we have probably 50% or 48 to 52% that is state employees, and the balance are political subdivision employees. How would they be impacted with this change?
Like the state, the political subdivisions and retirees, I mean, they wouldn't be impacted directly in terms of their benefits as long as you maintain the funding level. But you would be taking on the risk for all of them as well, like you did when we were self-insured. I mean, if the plan didn't have enough money and you needed to cash flow, you'd be cash flowing for all the rest of them as well, because you're in some ways, this is kind of like, I mean, this is kind of like the debate you have on a defined benefit and a defined contribution plan. I mean, in a defined benefit plan, you assume the risk of loss. And, you know, in a self-funded health insurance plan, you assume the risk of loss. And that's what you're doing here. And, you know, when in our plan, as we've talked about in the DB plan, I mean, that includes everybody. And so, you know, that whole loss reflects the entire group.
Okay.
But, you know, the other thing, keep in mind, like when you talk about self-insured and those that face the traditional one, for example, the city of Fargo is now in our plan. And they came in a few years ago, and I think they gave up their self-insurance to come under our plan. And we've had other political subdivisions that have given up their self-insurance to come underneath our plan. Again, because, you know, you get, if there's gains, you get the gains back like you would otherwise. I think Grand Forks was, they're under our plan now, and I think they were self-insured at one time. But, you know, so we have subdivisions coming under ours to get that type of hybrid contract.
Further questions? Or, Senator Dever.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sparb, I don't know if you might know, or if there's somebody here on the committee that's considering the bill, whether or not they're considering amendments to it.
Yes, there were some amendments offered yesterday.
We do have these amendments here, so we're going to have those passed out at this time.
And we haven't had a full opportunity to review those, maybe. We got those, but we haven't had a chance to incorporate that into here.
Did you need a copy of it?
I do have a copy of it. So I'm not well-versed in those amendments.
Would you care to comment on the amendments?
The amendments did a couple of things. I know one of our concerns was does this anticipate fully insuring or self-insuring our Medicare Part D contract? And it clarified no, it doesn't talk about doing that. It clarified that we could maybe use bank reserves to meet some of our reserve requirements. And so there are a couple of things in there that were addressed in the, I didn't mention those concerns and the concerns that I mentioned here, but most of the amendments were in the other area of the committee.
Jennifer, you drafted these amendments?
I did.
Did you have anything to add?
No, but I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Jennifer Clark at Legislative Council, and I did work with Representative Carlson in drafting these, and I think Sparb is probably right that, for the most part, these address the duties of the Employee Benefits Programs Committee.
Okay.
Let's see if there's an exception to that. I think it's the two things Sparb mentioned is we added two items here that were intended to be in response to PERS testimony at the committee hearing on 1436, and that those are the ones he had just mentioned where it talks about PERS being able to access the line of credit as far as the transition, as well as clarifying that the retirees and the Medicare Part D are not intended to be included. But I would be happy to answer any questions if people have questions about, I worked on the bill as well as the amendments, so I'm happy to try to answer any questions.
Well, we've got two experts in the room then. Committee, anything? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So during the hearing on the House Bill 1436, was there any discussion that we maybe won't have any insurance coverage on July 1st, or is that anything people brought up? And I don't know.
That was brought up in our prepared testimony that that's a concern, is the transition timeline, and it was those points that I mentioned to you.
Okay.
That we, you know.
But the committee really hasn't had.
And this is
they
still
haven't discussed this bill in the committee.
And this is still in committee over on the
House side.
On the House side. And I think they have a hearing scheduled next Monday on it as well, if I saw correctly. I don't know. I just got something that said meeting on Monday.
Senator Nelson, better not sit down yet, Sparb.
Yeah. Well, my question is, because I'm in the process of filling out my income tax, and one of the forms that I have to have says that I had coverage all year long, and every member of my household had coverage all year long. So I'm rather concerned about all of the members that we have here. If we have a lapse in coverage, we're not going to be able, we're all going to be in problems with the IRS next year.
Representative Doctor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It isn't, whoever you have the insurance with, they're required by law to send you out a 1095 that everyone receives. And because if you have two different insurance companies, you get two different 1095s. They'd X January, February, March, April, May, June. And if the new one would start July, it'd be, but you'd get two separate. So I don't see that as a concern at all. Well, we don't know if we have lapse coverage or not.
It appears we have some unanswered questions that we have to muddle through. Okay, is there anything further from your point, Mr. Collins?
I have another question.
Senator Nelson.
Reading, I believe it was Jennifer's response.
Can you turn the microphone on? I don't believe it.
I've got my, I see this as an assault on our committee, quite frankly. I'm going to be really blunt about it. We were set up statutorily to protect the employees that are covered by our plans and to restrict the activities that we can have. I just find it unacceptable.
Valid point. Any other comments? Anyone else here to testify on behalf of 1436? You want to oppose? In neutral or opposition?
Opposition.
Opposition. Okay. Welcome to the podium.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. I apologize that no subject matter expert from Sanford Health Plan is available this afternoon. So I'm Dan Hanaher with Sanford, and I appear before you today on behalf of Sanford Health Plan to oppose House Bill 1436, as we believe it amounts to an unconstitutional impairment of an existing contract. Sanford Health Plan takes a neutral position on whether or not the state wants to self-insure. In fact, as a carrier operating in four states, it's commonplace for states to self-insure their public employee plans. Sanford Health Plan provided both a fully insured and a self-insured proposal to North Dakota PERS in the 2015 bidding cycle. Consequently, Sanford Health Plan would gladly bid on a self-insured PERS request for proposal, but only after the expiration of our current contract. After meeting prescribed performance guarantees and satisfaction standards, Sanford Health Plan completed its initial two-year term of contract. As stated in the contract, renegotiations began in August 2016 and concluded in September of that same year. And Sanford Health Plan and the PERS board have already agreed to renew the contract for a second two-year term beginning July 1st, 2017 through June 30, 2019. Likewise, Sanford Health Plan and the PERS board have another option to renew the contract that would take effect July 1st, 2019 through June 30, 2021. If this bill is passed in its current form, Sanford Health Plan believes Section 5 of the bill will unconstitutionally impair Sanford Health Plan's existing contract with PERS. However, we would understand and would actively participate in a self-insured request for proposal for the 2021 biennium, if the state so chooses. Thank you for your time and consideration. I would stand for questions, although remember I'm not the subject matter expert.
Any questions for Mr. Hanaher? Senator Kilzer.
Madam Chairman and Mr. Hanaher, does Sanford Insurance administer any self-insured plans?
Chairman Krebsbach, Senator Kilzer, it is my understanding that we do indeed, but I could not cite them specifically for you, but we could get you information on that.
Any further questions? Senator?
In fact, if I may, Sanford Health's, the plan covering myself as an employee of Sanford Health Plan, I believe is a self-funded plan.
Senator Pullman.
Chairman Krebsbach and Mr. Hanaher, I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around this contractual issue. It seemed that SPARB was very careful to say, we haven't signed this yet. We've done all this agreement, all this negotiation, but it isn't signed yet. He mentioned the same thing in our committee when we talked about that in front of Representative Carlson. And so I'm wondering what the ramifications are if it hasn't been signed yet, but you've done all of this negotiation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Madam Chairman and Senator Pullman, I'm not sure that I can speak to it. Again, I'm not an attorney. SPARB may be a better person to comment on it. However, my understanding is we have a six-year contract in place that is renewable on three two-year basis, centered around meeting base criteria set forward by the PERS plan. And if those criteria are met, the contract is continued and renewed. I don't know if SPARB has anything additional to add to that, but again, not being an attorney, I don't know that I want to delve into that. But we believe we have a six-year contract currently in place.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Hanaher.
Thank you, committee.
Is there anyone else here today in opposition of the bill? Okay. Committee, I think, first of all, we're going to have to decide whether or not we take jurisdiction of this bill and move on from that point. So what are your wishes? Oh, Representative Anderson, sorry about that.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm new on this committee, but shouldn't have we took jurisdiction on this bill or not before it ever went to a hearing in the House? Or so, yeah. So I don't know I guess I need you to explain the process of why. I mean, clearly we don't have jurisdiction because it went right to the House.
I would say you're right on that point, and to get an expert opinion on that, I would turn to Jennifer Clark. I believe Senator Nelson has expressed her frustration, and I have in the past have expressed my total frustration with the blatant ignoring of the process that we have set up to protect all of this. To come with something like this at this stage of the game, it's totally unworkable. You need time to study it, to implement it, and everything. So, but Jennifer, I'll let you explain the process that we're supposed to be doing and how this comes about that it's ignored.
Excuse me, Madam Chairman. Okay. So, Madam Chairman, committee members, your statutory duties are set out in statute 5435.02.4. You will notice that in your bill that you're reviewing, that is one of the sections being reviewed. So you've got it in front of you right now in 1436. That's section one of the bill. So you could follow along there. There is a provision that says a bill is not to be introduced unless a report is attached. There is a provision that says an amendment is not to be, I think it says considered. Any amendment made during a legislative session to a legislative measure affecting PERS may not be considered by a standing committee unless it's come before this committee for a report. So you get it two ways. One, it shouldn't be introduced if it doesn't have the report. And two, if there's an amendment that would somehow affect PERS, that committee shouldn't consider it until it's come here. And I echo the chairman's frustration that this is very difficult to implement during session. This, although you're quite active this session, it is something that's been ongoing for sessions. It's been a struggle. This is not our first legislative session where this has been a struggle. If you think about in practice, how would you do this? If you're a legislator who has a PERS related idea and you do not bring it to this committee, you have an April 30 deadline, and then your last summer, you review those bills. Our agencies are quite good at bringing their bills before us. Our agency, you know, our executive branch and our legislative branch. And even our interim committees aren't bad. You will typically get those, you know, as you wrap up your interim activity. It's the individual legislators where it's a real struggle. Because your ideas oftentimes don't percolate until you've walked around and knocked on doors during November, or you've come and walked the halls in January and people present these wonderful ideas to you. So in practice, it's the individual legislators that are really challenging to abide by your statutory requirements here. If you think about what you do, you may come to my desk and say, I have this great idea, and I say, absolutely, I'll write that for you. And I will try to tell you, please be aware that this may be subject to employee benefits. It's not going to stop me from writing it.
Right.
When you take your covered bill and you've got your signatures and you walk up to your desk for us, I would be quite surprised if the member of the desk force in the House told you they weren't going to file your bill. So in this case, when Representative Carlson had this and put it through delayed bills, I would be very surprised if the desk force said, Representative Carlson, you can't file that bill because I've made a decision that it probably should have gone before this committee. So it is, in practice, a very challenging statute. So that's what you've got. Your amendments to 1436 in part try to address that, that frustration. Right. And I don't need to go into those amendments unless you invite me to do so. But that's what your law says today. That's what you've got today. The 1436, you'll notice the very last section, Section 8, is an attempt to affirmatively say the sponsors want an exception to your statutory duties.
What section was that?
I think it's 8.
Oh, 7. Okay.
7 on this one?
Mm-hmm.
Can I continue?
Representative Anderson.
However, thank you, Madam Chair. However, before putting the delay in front of Delayed Bills Committee, I mean, at least a courtesy to this committee could have been to get the committee together before delayed bills. Or would that, I mean, it still doesn't follow the statute, but it's still using our committee at least part of the way that should have been used.
You're absolutely right. There should have been consideration. And Senator Nelson and Senator Dever and Senator Kilzer and myself have served on this committee for a number of years, and we've never had a problem during session like this. And it's very frustrating because that was set up in place in the 80s to protect the funds. And if they're going to just ignore it, I'm not going to say get rid of it because I don't believe that'd be the proper thing to do. But I think some people have to come to consideration of the rest of the group in this whole thing because it's very frustrating. We're wasting hours going through stuff like this, and it's not needed. Anyway, committee, do we want to take jurisdiction? Yes.
Can I just ask one last question?
Senator Pullman.
It does feel like Groundhog Day around here, but if you take a look at page 3 of the bill itself, on 1436, subsection 7, about of line 9, 11, says any legislation enacted in contravention of this section is invalid and of no force and effect, and any benefits provided under such legislation must be reduced to the level current prior to enactment. So my question to our legal counsel here would be, if this is already in statute, couldn't, let's say the House were to pass this out, couldn't the Senate say that this bill is invalid because it hasn't gone through this process?
I would think that...
Could we do that? Could we say we refuse to take it up? I mean, I'm not saying that this is what's going to happen here. I don't want to...
No, I know.
It is a legitimate question. That's all I'm saying. It's just a question.
Jennifer, we're going to put you on the spot again.
Yes, you are. Madam Chairman, committee members, Senator Pullman, you're right. That's a very powerful sounding section of law. And we assume that the Legislative Assembly doesn't do anything without purpose. Everything you do has purpose. And you enacted this. House and Senate enacted a piece of legislation that included that language. You see it on your bill on page 3, lines 11 through 13. I'm not aware of that ever having been utilized. I think in practice it's going to be a bit of a challenge. It's really easy when you guys pass laws and we apply them to other people. People who aren't the legislative branch, because they don't have authority to draft legislation, to set law. You do. So you're in the unique situation as a legislative branch, is if you by majority vote do something that conflicts with a directive to yourselves, there is a position that could be taken that you intended to do that and you overruled it and that was last passed and this is more specific and we mean this. And that's different from when you pass legislation that affects the executive branch. They don't have that authority. You do. I'm not guaranteeing how a challenge would play out, but that is a very important part of the analysis, that you are unique, because it's difficult for you to bind future legislative assemblies. If this passed in the 1980s, most of those individuals aren't here any longer. You have the unique ability to set new legislation by every legislative assembly. So I'm not saying that 7 isn't valid, but it certainly is subject to challenge based on that.
And I'm just going to comment quickly that I have no problem with the legislative body making changes. But if it's to be made change, or I mean, if it's to be made change in the process, it should come forth, be heard in the committee, acted on in the committee, and acted on by the entire body. And the changes should be made before you stub it in their nose to do it one way or the other. I'm sorry, Representative Doctor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, we're going to have issue with the next one also, Senate Bill 2053. It's on our calendar for the House, and we'll be voting on that bill tomorrow as a 14-0 do pass. Just to let everyone
okay.
know.
Okay. Well, committee, we better move along. Do we want to take jurisdiction on 1436?
Madam Chair, I stepped out for a couple of minutes, so I'm not sure that I caught the whole conversation. And I guess regarding Senator Pullman, her comment, I think we could do that. I think, though, at least we in the Senate try to work together. But Section 7 bothers me. Section 7 says this act is not subject to review by the Employee Benefits Program Committee. I was of the impression that bills take effect after they're passed and signed by the governor, that you can't contravene the process by saying it doesn't apply unless it was passed previous to that. So I don't know.
The chair would ask for a motion to either take jurisdiction jurisdiction or not take jurisdiction on House Bill 1436.
Madam Chair, Senator I would move Pullman. To take jurisdiction of House Bill 1436, although I don't know why it matters.
You're right.
Madam Chair, I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Now, are we Senator talking Nelson. About the bill or the amendments or both?
They were both explained, so let's incorporate them all in one. The bill, .03,000, and the amendment, .03001.
Madam Chair.
Representative Beening.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess once we take possession of the bill, I think it's going to still go forward in. I think if this is an IBL committee, they're going to have a hearing on Monday. So what's going to happen then if we have possession of it? Are they going to be able to hear the bill on Monday?
That's up to the House.
So that's where I'm confused here. We're going to take possession of the bill, but yet it's got a scheduled hearing for Monday. So who's going to have possession of the bill when we leave here today?
Madam Chair, I would just say that I'm seconded
Senator
that motion Devers. Out of positive regard for the process and for this committee that exists for this purpose. The reason for taking jurisdiction and putting a recommendation then would be for the committee to take that into consideration however they choose to.
I would agree with that. It's simply to make a recommendation on the bill. And that recommendation would follow the bill to wherever it goes, in my estimation. I'm getting a nod of assent, so let's do that. We do have then before us this bill. Let's take action on it immediately.
We need the roll call to take jurisdiction.
Okay. We need to have a roll call vote on taking jurisdiction. So, Alex, would you be kind enough to call roll on that bill or that motion?
Senators Chairman Kresbach.
Aye.
Dever.
Yes.
Kilger.
Aye.
Nelson.
Yeah.
Pullman.
Aye.
Representatives Kreit.
Yeah.
Anderson.
Yes.
Boehning.
Yeah, well.
Doctor.
Yes.
Guggisberg.
Yes.
Lanning.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Madam Chair, motion carries.
Okay, that motion carried.
Madam Chair, I move an unfavorable recommendation.
We have a motion for an unfavorable from Senator Nelson. Is there a second? Senator Kilzer.
Amendment?
What?
Is that for the bill and the amendment?
I would say so. We combined them both before, so we'll combine them again.
To go boom right into it.
Actually, it would be that bill as amended.
It hasn't been amended yet.
Okay, as proposed to be amended. Then we have an unfavorable recommendation for this bill. Do we have any discussion on it?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dever.
For the interest of the committee, first, I don't necessarily oppose the idea of self-insurance, but I don't think it's something that we will accomplish in what some would hope to be the next 17 days in this session. There is a study now attached to House Bill 1023 to study it in the process. I proposed that. I'm serious about that. I very much think that if we come to a better understanding of the whole process and the legislative involvement in that process, that we will all be better for it. And if that study, if it's approached with an open mind, whatever conclusion it comes to, if there are changes that we should make to our process or changes that we make to the legislative involvement in that process, going forward, then I think we can consider that in the next session. So I'm going to support the unfavorable recommendation as a matter of timing. if we come back from a study in 2 years and say that's the way we should go, then that may be the way that we should go. So I just wanted to make sure that people were aware that, that there is that alternative.
Okay, thank you. And you really expressed a lot of the words I would have to say, too. I'm definitely open-minded about studying the fact that we could self-insure as a state. There's nothing wrong with looking at other options and opportunities, but I do say that we need to make sure that if we're going to do it, let's either follow the existing law, or if we want to make changes, let's make those changes and then proceed. So I'm ready for the question. Anyone else here want to say anything before we vote? Okay. Question has been called. All, would you please call the roll for the unfavorable recommendation to House Bill 1436?
Technically, you need a vote on the call of the question.
I was just informed we need a vote on the call of the question. Does that have to be a roll call vote, Jennifer?
Perhaps just ask if anybody's opposed.
Thank you. Then we will ask Alec to take roll on the unfavorable recommendation for House Bill 1436.
Senators, Chairman Kresbach.
Aye.
Dever.
Yes.
Kilzer.
Aye.
Nelson.
Yes.
Pullman.
Yes.
Representatives, Kreit.
Yeah.
Anderson.
Yeah.
Boehning.
No.
Doctor.
No.
Gugisberg.
Yes.
Lanning.
Yes.
Schneider.
Yes.
Madam Chair, motion carries.
Okay. Then, committee, let's move on quickly to House Bill or Senate Bill 2053.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Barb Collins with the Public Employees Retirement System. 2053, there is two changes. The first change was one that PERS brought forward, and what it has to do with is when the after we completed the process with you on this bill, of course, the election took place, and the Affordable Care Act now all of a sudden came to the forefront with the possibility of being repealed. Given that, as we looked at our statute, we realized that when the Affordable Care Act came in, we incorporated that into our statute for temporary employees. It adopts those requirements and says the employer will pay the premium and those things. And we realize that if the Affordable Care Act is actually repealed, then our statute isn't doesn't provide for that. And so what this does is it just provides that if the an if-then situation, if nothing changes, the existing statute stays in place. If the Affordable Care Act is actually repealed, then it takes this out of the statute and puts into place how we would operate going forward. And, you know, just to make sure here, for example, the big provision in the Affordable Care Act is that employers had to pay part of the premium for employees. If that goes away, that requirement goes away, and that's one of the things we're reflecting here in that change. So this is just to be an if-then type of thing, because we realize we probably may not have another opportunity to talk to you about this for 2 years, and so we decided to have that added in case this occurs. And the second amendment was made in the House, and what, as you may remember, in this bill it provided that the Bureau of Criminal Investigations, their contribution rate would drop from by 0.5%, and as they looked at it, they preferred not to drop it at this time, but leave it at the same rate that it is right now. And you know, I can't talk for the full committee, but I mean, some of the discussion was that right now they're at 6% in premium payment. And other state employees are at 7%, and felt that there was, instead of dropping it to 5.5%, there would be more equity among state employees having the two closer together. Why we have proposed dropping it to 5.5 is that's what the other members of the system pay. And so, you know, if you look at it one way, there's one perspective. If you look at it the other way, you can do the other perspective of it. As far as the system, I mean, when we prepared the actuarial report for you back in October, if the contributions rate by BCI remains higher, actually the system will be slightly better off because they'll be paying, we'll be getting more cash than we would otherwise. And so those are generally, at a high level, the two changes. The one to accommodate changes in the Affordable Care Act, if that occurs. If it doesn't, stays the same now. And the other one is changing, that the House may change the, keep, not change, but to keep the contribution rate by BCI the same. And actuarially, like I say, that's more money in the system, so.
Okay, and both of those amendments are included in this engrossment, are they not?
Yes, I believe so.
Money, obviously. This is the Senate version.
This is the Senate version, okay.
Is it in?
Madam Chair.
Alec, would you explain to us what we've got with before us? And
Sorry, Madam Chair, members of the committee. What you have before you is the Senate version of the bill. We don't, we didn't get the House version printed off. I guess we have the wrong one.
I can look real quickly to see if it's engrossed in online. Okay, so it's online if you want to see. It hasn't been, has it been adopted by the House? Okay, so it's online, but it hasn't been voted on. It's the suspended engrossed version that you'll see on the calendar or that you'll see online. Does that make sense? It came out of committee. There's been a committee report. The chairman has signed off on it. It's gone to the desk. It's waiting for floor action to adopt the amendments. Is that correct?
They've already adopted it.
Okay, so it really is. It's no longer in suspense. So you can grab that. You can see what it looks like engrossed online.
Is there a way
Madam
we
Chair?
Could get a copy of the amendments?
Oh, they're online. If you want me to go get that right now, I can. Will you take up
can
your
you
next bill?
We can print them off here in the Senate room. Do you want to see the amendments?
Not particularly. I move we take jurisdiction.
Okay. We have a motion to take jurisdiction. Nelson and Pullman. Pullman. Is there any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, would the clerk please call roll for the committee to take jurisdiction on Senate Bill 2053 once again.
Senators, Chairman Kressbach.
Aye.
Dever.
Aye.
Kilzer.
Aye.
Nelson. Pullman?
Aye.
Representatives Crite?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Boehning?
No.
Doctor?
No.
Gugisberg?
Yes.
Laning?
Yes.
Schneider?
Yes.
Madam Chair, motion carries.
Okay. We now have the bill before us. What is the wishes of the committee?
So, Madam Chair, I have a question for SPARB.
Mr. Collins?
So the amendments do two things, I understand. One of them would be to comply with ACA. And the second one is that the BCI rates will be the only ones in their particular category that will be of one rate, and everybody else in their category is at a 0.5% less.
Yes.
Whereas the rationale they're using is that keeping them where they are is keeping them with everybody else in the system that's not in that particular grouping.
I think that was one of the considerations.
But you say they're going to be better off with it. And how many people are in the BCI section of the?
39. Oh, 40.
40.
That's not a large. It's not a large group.
Okay.
Madam Chairman.
Representative Lunning.
I would move we give a favorable recommendation to 153 as amended.
We have a favorable recommendation being recommended for this bill and a second. Is there any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, would you please call roll?
Representatives Kreit.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Boehning.
Yes.
Doctor.
Yes.
Gugisberg.
Yes.
Lehning.
Yep.
Schneider.
Yes.
Senators Pullman.
Yes.
Nelson.
Yes.
Kilzer.
Aye.
Dever.
Okay.
Kresbach.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, then committee, we have one bill left to look at, and that is House Bill 1403.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Barb Collins with PERS. House Bill 1403 was one that has been before you earlier. That was submitted at the beginning of the session, and that came before you, and if I recall correctly, at that time you took jurisdiction of the bill. And gave the bill a neutral recommendation. At that time, we shared with you some information from Deloitte and some information from the PERS board, and the PERS board's suggestion on the bill was to make this, instead of being what we view as a mandatory criteria in awarding a contract, to be a preference criteria in awarding the contract. And so since the time that that you took jurisdiction, gave it a neutral recommendation, we have been working along that line. And we have now amendments here to make this a preference criteria rather than a mandatory criteria. And this bill is awaiting consideration or final consideration here in the Senate before the Human Services Committee, and would be offering them those amendments. And what does that basically mean when I say a mandatory or preference criteria? What the bill does is puts into place a process for us to do audits of pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs. And it sets up the requirements as how we should look at it and how we should do it, and that this should be something that we should include in contracts. The way we interpret the bill today is it's a mandatory criteria. In other words, in our contracts, we would have this as kind of a minimum qualification. And when we go through a contract, if they didn't agree to do this, they're out of consideration. The difference between that and a preference criteria is that as a preference criteria, we're saying that all things being equal, we're going to give preference to the one that agrees to these terms. And so that's advantageous because we use preference criteria in other situations, and what it does is it tells the vendor when we go out to bid that this is something we're going to give some preference to. And so when you put together your proposal, give some serious thought to this. At the end of the day, though, as a preference criteria, it's viewed in total with everything else by the board. And as you look at like pharmacy is about 17% of our overall business in health. And that's an important part when we talk about the number of dollars we have. But if a vendor was not willing to let us do these things on the pharmacy side, we don't want to throw them out if they're giving us a good deal on the other 80%. So we want to be able to weigh this against all of the factors. And as preference criteria, that's what we do, and so that's the amendments that we're suggesting to the Human Service Committee to make that change from a mandatory to a preference criteria. And there's a lot of amendments here, but basically just restructuring and getting it into that overall point.
Mr. Collins, there are proposed amendments to this bill, and they should be addressed at this time also?
just, yeah, the bill, you've looked at the bill earlier, and, you know, at that time we were just had gotten, and at that time the board had suggested that when the bill came in that we felt that it should be moved from mandatory to criteria, mandatory to a preference criteria, and that's what we've been working on since you took jurisdiction on it. These are the amendments to accomplish that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pullman.
Madam Chair and Sparb, did you offer these amendments in the House Human Services Committee?
No. Okay. And let me explain. First of all, that's actually kind of embarrassing. We missed the hearing. We had the wrong time. Now we did offer not the amendments but the testimony later. But I wish I could tell you something different. But in all honesty, that's.
Mr. Collins, there's one other question I have. This is the first engrossment, so the House made changes to it since we heard it last also, did they not? Or did we hear it in between?
That I don't know. And I think the House made fairly minor. Maybe they did make a change. It was pretty minor, wasn't it?
You know, it seems to me maybe we did hear this one a little earlier, the changes that had been made on it, I believe. Alec?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the only change the House made was to add a section exempting it from the jurisdiction of this committee.
Oh. Okay, that explains that. Anyway, we are getting copies of the amendments that SPARB has been proposed, and I think as long as we're looking at that, we'd better look at those.
They're in the handout.
Oh, in the handout. Oh.
They're after. Okay. After the copy from Deloitte.
We've got 20 copies.
Yeah, cancel them.
I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that.
Just to have the single ones. Okay. Yeah. All right. And you have explained the amendments that you are proposing. So, committee, here again, I think we're down to a point. Do we want to take jurisdiction on 1403?
The amendment.
The amendment. And the amendment. What? Well, they made a change here.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
So I think we have jurisdiction. Can we just make a favorable recommendation?
No. I mean, you can make a motion, but.
I make a motion for favorable. Because I think we do have.
Members, you don't have jurisdiction over the amendment yet, so the bill on the amendment.
Further, we have not made taken jurisdiction over the Section 2 amendment on the bill when it came from the House. Am I correct on that?
You can take jurisdiction without amendment.
Then we'd accept that. Can we split the vote? Okay. Committee, what I'm thinking is we can take jurisdiction and then we can split the vote on the Section 2 amendment or the amendments being proposed by Mr. Collins. So we can have two votes.
Madam Chair.
We had a motion for favorable from Representative Doctor, and did somebody second it? Okay.
We have to take jurisdiction.
Oh, we got to take jurisdiction. Sorry about that. Somebody want to make a motion for that?
Madam Chair, I'll make a recommendation to take jurisdiction with the amendment, or take jurisdiction of the amendment.
I'll second that.
Amendments.
And that is Senate Representative Doctor and Representative Kreit. Any discussion? Please call roll on the amendments that are being proposed to 1403 and taking jurisdiction on those.
Representatives Kreit.
Yes.
Henderson.
Yes.
Boehning.
Yeah.
Doctor.
Yes.
Gugisberg.
Yes.
Laning.
Yes.
Schneider.
Yes.
Senators Pullman. Nelson. Kilter.
Aye.
Dever.
Yes.
Krebsbach.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Unanimously.
Oh, yeah.
Now we have, we'll take two motions. We'll take one motion on the section two on the bill as it came from the House. And the second motion would be on the proposed amendments by Mr. Collins.
Madam Chair, in the essence of time, I would make an unfavorable recommendation on the Section 2 amendment exempting the jurisdiction of this committee.
Second.
Unfavorable on Section 2. Well, it does to me.
We'll give it to her.
Who else? Who seconded that?
Anderson.
Okay. We have a motion to give an unfavorable recommendation on Section 2 of the bill. Any discussion? Hearing none, would you please take roll on that motion?
Representatives Kreit.
No.
Anderson.
Yes.
Boehning.
No.
Doctor.
No.
Gugisberg.
Yes.
Laning.
No, I guess.
Schneider.
Yes.
Senators Pullman.
Yes.
Nelson.
Yes.
Kilter.
Aye.
Dever.
Yes.
Krebsbach.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. And then we have a motion we would need to accept the amendments proposed by Mr. Collins to House
Madam
Bill.
Chair, question.
Yes.
SPARB
Representative Boehning.
SPARB, is the bill sponsor in favor of these amendments? Has he looked at the amendments? What was his opinion on them?
He's looked at the amendments. I don't believe he's in favor of the amendments.
Okay.
I think he would prefer it to be a mandatory criteria.
Is there any further questions? Hearing none, would you please call roll? We haven't made the motion yet, have we? I'm tired. It's my third one this afternoon, 3, 4, and 5.
There hasn't been a motion yet.
There hasn't been a motion yet. Thank you. Does anyone wish to make a motion on accepting or rejecting, giving it a favorable, unfavorable, or no recommendation? One of the three. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move for a favorable on these amendments.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Dever.
First, I'd like to point out, the question was asked of SPARB if he offered the amendments in House Human Services. Actually, the history of the bill is it was referred to House Human Services and re-referred to IBNL.
Mm-hmm.
So just so we're clear mm-hmm. on that. And I don't think I've had, you know, we had the issue at the end of the last session. And my argument then was that you don't just pop that up and do it. So I have not had an objection to having an audit of the PBM. I like SPARB's suggested amendments to, I see that it's problematic to require it if some would go along with it and some wouldn't. So I think when he says if you pick the one that allows that preference, all things being equal, I think you factor it into the consideration of the bids. I think it's a good amendment.
Is there any other comments to be made? Hearing none, would you please call for the roll call on the favorable recommendation on the amendments proposed by Mr. Collins to House Bill 1403.
Representatives Crite.
No.
Anderson.
Yes.
Boehning.
No.
Doctor.
No.
Kugelsberg.
Yes.
Lehning.
No.
Schneider.
Yes.
Senators Pullman. Nelson.
Yes.
Kilzer. Dever.
Aye.
Krebsbach.
Aye.
Motion carries.
8-4. Okay. Committee, from what I see, that concludes our work for the day. Any other comments by anyone today? We've had enough. And with that, we will adjourn the Employee Benefits Committee on March 23rd.